Right, today I am in the Star Sports Mayfair office with Matt Barker. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us today, Matt.
No worries, mate.
Now, you're a professional cricket punter.
That's right.
Can you, well, basically tell us who you are, but your background and what you do, basically?
Yeah, so I bet professionally on cricket full-time. I've done this for 12 years. This will be my 12th year now. Started when I was quite young, just with the idea of making a couple of hundred quid here and there to pay for the beers and anything that we could find that would be extra would be great. And we just sort of, I just sort of moved up. So I think it was quite lucky that I started so young, because there was not significantly less pressure. So it wasn't to pay the rent or buy anything extravagant. It was just for part-time money on top of what I was doing at the time, which was working in a bar.
So how did your interest in actual betting start?
I think I was pretty standard young English lad. I used to have a tenner on the football here and there. The Saturday afternoons, sit in the pub and watch the games. Sunday afternoons, same thing. Was obviously terrible, like everybody is. Never won any money. And then Betfair came along, and that was sort of a game changer for me.
So was it cricket originally with Betfair?
No, it wasn't. Actually, my first ever bet on Betfair was Clásico, Madrid and Barcelona. And we found out that about Betfair, a couple of our mates, and they said, oh, you get better odds on everything. And we were setting up accounts, and we were upstairs setting accounts up, and it was the Clásico that night, and put tenner in my account, and saw that 0-0 was 1,000 on the Clásico. I thought, wow, that's a good price for 0-0. It's usually like 30-1. I know it's loads of goals in the Clásico, but I thought that was a good price. So I had a fiver on 0-0 at 1,000 and walked downstairs. And obviously the reason it was 1,000 is because it was already 1-0 to Madrid. So that was my first ever bet on Betfair that went terribly.
So when did it start making you money? How long did it take you to get savvy?
Yeah, quite a while. I think it's a pretty common story, learning the ropes of Betfair and then learning the concept of a lay bet. So learning decimal odds for a start, which wasn't a thing at the time, and then learning about laying horses was the first thing that I did. So I thought I was a genius, because you know, it's easy. You just lay this 16-1 shot and you win a fiver every time, and then obviously one wins and you think, oh Jesus. So yeah, that's how I first got into it. Familiarised myself with the concepts quite quickly, and then sort of realised that cricket was a sport that had a lot of ups and downs, a lot of trades that could be made without knowing what a trade was at the time. I could just see that the prices fluctuated a lot. During a cricket match, obviously, both teams look likely to win frequently. And then as a trader, that's a good thing, and that just sort of built from there.
So did you have an in-depth knowledge of cricket before you started trading on it?
Yeah, I'd say so. I played cricket to a reasonable standard in Lancashire. Played for the Lancs under 16 team and town teams and league sides and stuff. So I was quite good as a kid. So I guess I had an inherent knowledge of the sport. I didn't necessarily know everything about the professional game. But I had a good base knowledge of cricket.
And would that give you the edge over normal other punters?
I don't think so. I don't think my knowledge was especially great compared to most people. It was probably marginally better. I think it's more of a logical mind. More numbers make sense in my head very much. I'm terribly uncreative. Can't play any instruments, can't draw, can't do anything like that. So I'm very logical. And I think that a combination of being able to process numbers fast and yeah, knowledge of cricket helped in the early stages for sure.
So would you say that cricket is a predictable sport, or have you found a way to crack something that's unpredictable?
To the average person, I wouldn't say cricket's predictable, no. The other day, Bangladesh beat South Africa, which everyone considers an upset. A lot of people in the cricketing world thought that it was a very close matchup, and Bangladesh were 4-1. So everybody says that's an upset. So that would be unpredictable. In our minds, in my mind, it wasn't that unpredictable. But weird stuff happens, like any sport, I guess. So it's not it's certainly not predictable. But I think from my perspective, it's about weighing up the chances of something happening versus the price of that chance happening.
So do you ever bet with bookmakers pre-match, or is it all done on the
exchange? Yeah, no, I do. I used to bet a lot with bookmakers, but as I've gone on this sort of journey, obviously well publicised, people limiting and closing accounts, and then you have to find creative ways of getting your bets on. I live in Australia, so there's no shops like there is here. So if you walk down the high street, you can bet with 5-6 different bookies in a shop. Over there, there's only one. So you can't get bets on in the same way over there as you can here. And obviously online, I get limited very fast. So I used to bet a lot with bookies. I do it a lot less now, just because it's so hard to get on.
So the same problem in Australia for limiting, there's no minimum stake that you can...
Yeah, not yet. There's minimum bet rules for racing in Australia. They have to bet you to lose $2,000 per horse, which is fantastic for the racing guys, but obviously I think it's in the offing, but it's nowhere near there yet.
Okay. Do you think that bookmakers make more mistakes pricing up cricket than they do other sports?
Probably not, no. At least back in the day, I know that there were some very shrewd odds compilers. A few friends of mine are odds compilers for bookies, and they're intelligent lads. I do know that sometimes bookies will employ someone that doesn't have an inherent knowledge of the sport. They're just a computer whiz or whatever, and then they'll trust their algorithm or whatever to price up markets. But no, I would say that bookies tend to price up at least the main markets quite well. There's definitely some edge. For example, I hardly ever back a top batsman that isn't an opener in a limited overs game. So I think that bookies tend to price their market a little bit too evenly and not weighted quite heavily enough to the openers.
So are there any particular bookmakers you think of exceptional pricing up cricket as opposed to others?
Nah, I've no idea. I'm way out of the loop over here now, to be honest. I know Bet365 are the market leader in cricket. They have more markets than anyone else. They tend to take bigger bets than anyone else, but I don't know that they are any better than anyone else. There's a couple of bookies over in Australia that are really good. Like they'll let you on, they'll let you have a crack, they'll trust their traders, which is good, but I don't really know over here.
No, I think it's generally accepted with the horse racing that the SP, the Betfair SP, is about the most accurate reflection of the true odds you're going to get.
Yep.
Is that similar for cricket?
It's a good question. In test matches, it's a lot less liquid than any big horse race. So that's obviously open to manipulation with not too much money, whereas at Epsom the other week, if, you know, you'd struggle to push a horse anywhere with astronomical amounts of money. So I think that the more liquid a sport, the more accurate in theory the price is. I think the edges tend to be in play rather than pre-play, because there's so many statistical analysis that you can do pre-match. You know, there's ground analysis, team analysis, player analysis. So bookies and punters put all of this stuff together and they come up with a price, and it's usually not far wrong. But then as soon as the game starts, then obviously punters and bookies have to think on their feet a lot more, and there's a lot more scope for sort of looking for an edge, attacking a bowler or taking on a batsman. And that's a very small part of the game, but you can you could back a side for 20 minutes based on taking on specific players on either side, not necessarily backing the side to win the game. You're just backing the side in that period of time to be a shorter price than they were when you back them.
Now, do bookmakers or the exchanges get caught napping at all when the conditions change or when something happens?
Yeah, I'd say so. Again, it's sort of experience. I think a lot of this is experience. So day-night test matches, for example, no one really knew what was going to happen with a pink ball under lights, and then suddenly it swung around corners and batsmen couldn't play, and the first couple of day-night test matches, obviously everyone was caught by surprise because no one really knew. But then what tends to happen is, it's like anything, when everybody knows the outcome, you're almost better off fading everybody else, you know. So everybody knows now that the ball swings at night in test matches, so you're almost better backing against that because the prices go so far, because everybody thinks, oh, I want to be on the bowling side, whereas the edge would have been before everybody knew that they wanted to be on the bowling side.
How fluid is your betting going into a match? Would you make a firm decision about who you think is going to win, or do you just let things unfold and bet accordingly?
Yeah, I think I do best when I don't have any preconceived ideas. Because what happens is you tend to get stuck in these ideas when the game starts, and fundamentally, as soon as the first ball's bowled, your opinion doesn't really matter about what's going to happen. You have to just base it on what is happening at the time. So I have opinions pre-match and I have bets pre-match, but I try not to let them influence what I'm doing during the game.
And how do you prioritise what markets you're going to play in?
I play on the most liquid markets usually, so I'll usually just bet in the match odds markets, the team that's going to win.
And what would your what would you think for your personal betting the best format of cricket to bet on, and why?
So that's interesting. When I first started, I found test matches the easiest to read. I found them the easiest to make money on. But as I've progressed over the years, I've realised that it's all to do with how much money you make per hour or per period of time that you work. So I do a lot less on test matches now, simply because it can take 40 hours for a test match to settle, so you might have to put 40 hours of work in, and that's with no prep, that's just while the game's on. T20's 3.5, and I can make a similar amount of money on a T20 as I can make on a test match usually, so per hour it's way more worth my time to do 2020 cricket. But the flip side to that is, for someone that isn't experienced, it's high octane stuff, you know, like a ball can change the entire game, whereas with a test match you've got a lot more time to think and recover. The markets move incredibly quickly in a 2020.
And what sort of level are we talking on the game?
I work in sort of five figures now, but I could have sort of medium five figures on a game, and then another game I could have like a couple of grand or less. I think one of my edges comes from only being involved in the market at certain periods of time. I think a lot of people are involved far too often. They run positions too long, they have a bet for the sake of having a bet, they have a bet at the first ball or whatever. Like the World Cup at the moment, every game's 8 hours long. There's no reason to be involved in the first 20 minutes if you don't want to be. So I think one of the things that I do really well is not bet for a long period of the game.
So would your ultimate aim to be winning whatever happens? Is that how you would try and work it?
Yeah, I try not to judge it on that. I try and just make as many good decisions as possible, and then the outcome takes care of itself. But so many people have asked me stuff like, oh, if you got to, do you have a certain target in mind per game? And that's so stupid, because if you were trying to get to 500 quid and you make 500 quid in the first 10 minutes, why would you stop? You know, it's my career, it's my job, I work during the cricket, and if I was 500 quid down after 10 minutes I wouldn't turn it off, so why turn it off from 500 quid up?
Okay, Matt, thank you. So when I was asked to try and get hold of you, I assumed the best we could do would be a Skype call, because you're based in Australia, but
that's right.
As luck would have it, you came over for the Cricket World Cup. Is that something just because you love doing it, or is it very important to actually be there?
Yeah, it's not. So the reason that I came over here for this tournament was not to attend the games. It's nice to be in the country. I feel like you get sort of a sense of the games. You get caught up in the atmosphere, which is lovely, but I do feel like you get a slight advantage for being here that I wouldn't have if I was at home. But it's more to do with the time zones. To be honest, I just didn't want to work 7 weeks of nights. It starts at 8 p.m. in Australia, finishes at 5 a.m. or something. I just didn't fancy that for 7 weeks. So it was worth the travel and accommodation costs. I'll make more money being here than I would working nights in Australia.
It's interesting you say work. Do you see it as work?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just a job to me. I don't enjoy it as much as I used to. It's not it's not a when I'm finished, the last thing I want to do is sit and look at a computer screen. I want to get out of the house, you know, even if it's just to go for a beer or go for a walk or something, just to get away. I just see it as a job these days.
Okay, now obviously what you're doing now, you've been doing it for 12 years, has your betting evolved in that time?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously stakes have increased, just with bigger banks and more confidence, more knowledge, more experience. I'm a lot less aggressive than I used to be, which is a bit weird. I used to back myself a lot more and I used to run positions a lot longer. Now I'm looking to be a little bit tighter. That possibly comes with knowing that it's a full-time career and it pays the bills, whereas back in the day it was a sort of a part-time career and then evolved into full-time, but my expenses were significantly less when I was 22 than now. I think that I'm less aggressive, but and at the same time I make a lot more money.
Right, so obviously you've got confidence in your ability and it's proven ability. You've made money for 12 years plus. Has there ever been a losing run where you've started to doubt that and your confidence has faltered?
Yeah, you have. Especially I found with when I was betting with the bookies, you do have runs where weeks on end you just feel like you can't find a bet. What I used to do is I used to reduce my stakes down a lot when I was on those types of runs. But I do remember 5 or 6 years ago thinking, where is my next winner coming from? But you get through those. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter, almost doesn't matter what edge you have. Still a bet. There's still, if you have a 60-40 edge on a coin flip, that's a huge edge. But you're still going to lose 4 times out of 10. I don't know. I think that my edge these days is such on the exchanges that I won't really go through those runs. So I don't really have that kind of issue. But you do have other issues with the exchanges, like premium charge and stuff. It's difficult to get around your head the first time it happens. You know, I really struggled with it when it first happened. But you just deal with it these days.
I was going to ask that. They've done that in Australia as well.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it was. I don't know. I'm not going to start getting into the pros and cons, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Who said what? But just for a young lad, when you sort of feel like you've cracked it, and then suddenly you're paying on a weekly basis, basically a success fee, it can really get in your head. So especially when it went to 40% and then 50%, you think, well, is an even shot really an even shot anymore? If it wins, I'm going to pay half of it out, and if it loses, it loses. So that was a difficult mental challenge, but you just sort of deal with that, I guess.
Okay, is your punting constantly adapting? You're always looking for a different edge?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think it has to be. A lot of people, sounds old in the tooth, but since I started, a lot of people have come and gone. A lot of people that thought they were pro punters are no longer pro punters. A lot of people that thought they were very good clearly weren't. And I think that the market has got smarter. But at the same time, I've made more money this year than last year, and last year than the year before. So I'm certainly not at a stage where the market's caught me up. But it definitely is catching other people up, which is interesting.
Okay, is cricket betting like a science with a code that any good mathematician can crack, or do you need to be shrewd and adopt some natural thinking?
I don't think it is. So a lot of sports now are being bet with algorithms, and the data science guys are mining the data and then betting. I know some prominent English guys who own football clubs have done very well out of football and are starting to bet into other sports. The thing with cricket is that the pitch is a living thing. So if you so at Roland Garros at the moment, right, the dimensions of every court are the same. Every court's a clay court. It doesn't matter whether you play on centre court or one of the outside courts. Everything's the same. So you can sort of data mine that. You can sort of create a model for that. I think you can do the same with NBA. Every basketball court's the same size. But with cricket, not only the conditions completely different at every ground, but the pitch changes throughout the game as well. So I'm not sure how they'll model that. I'm sure they'll try, but I think it'll be the last sport that they'll be able to, if they take over the world, I think cricket will be the last one that they manage to take over.
Okay, they talk about unpredictable things. There's been some well-publicised cases of corruption in cricket in the past. Are those days gone in the sport, do you think, or do you look for signs of it and follow the hooky money?
I don't think they're gone. I think there'll always be a temptation to not necessarily fix the game, but to fix small parts of the game, which is very beneficial to people if they have that knowledge. You know, players are only human. If someone offers you a lot of money, there'll be a temptation there for some people. I think one of the interesting things is that so few games are fixed, but a lot more games people think are fixed, which is interesting. And I usually make reasonable money out of the fact that people are terrified that a game might be fixed when it's not. It's just sport. So markets will move far too far because of some rumour or some theory that this IPL game's fixed or that IPL game's fixed or whatever. And you'll get hurt on the 1 in 1,000 or 10,000 or whatever it is that does have something dodgy going on, but you'll make far more money opposing the ones that aren't, because 99% of games aren't, at least.
Okay, a lot of people would say, go back to horse racing analogy again, that the higher the grade, obviously, the more reliable it is. How low a grade in cricket do you go to find your bets?
I used to bet into county cricket. I don't do that anymore, just because I bet in significantly larger stakes than I used to. Liquidity needs to be higher for me. So the lowest that I'll go now will be domestic one day cricket. So it'd be like domestic tournaments like the IPL, the Big Bash, the Blast here, and then domestic 50 over tournaments as well. Domestic 4 day cricket doesn't have any liquidity to it, so I just avoid that. It's usually the top level, though. I mean, there's 400 international games a year. Something ridiculous. Like, there's 400 high-level cricket games a year that are televised, which is more than one a day. I don't need to, there's plenty of cricket on for me. I don't need to delve any deeper than I do.
And do you intentionally take downtime?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I didn't used to. I think it's part of getting old. I think when I was 22, I was very happy to work day and night. All the games, didn't matter what time it was. If it was in England, I'd do the Australian games middle of the night and then just deal with the lifestyle, whereas now I very rarely work nights. One of the reasons I'm here, so I didn't want to do the nights in Australia. I think that it's very tempting to do every game, but as you get more comfortable and you realise that you do have an edge, there's a game tomorrow, there's always another game. There's no reason to bet, if you're in England, there's no reason to bet an Australian game in the middle of the night, because there's every chance that there'll be a game in India or in Dubai the next day, and it'll be on perfect times for English punters. So I think that's an important thing as well. As professional gamblers, we have really average lifestyles health-wise. We sit at a desk all the time, we stare at screens, and I think it's important to get away.
Talking about getting away, I mean, you said you've come to England for the of the time difference. Do you travel to like India, Pakistan, places like that for the cricket?
Yeah, we do. I've not done India or Pakistan, but I've done cricket in South Africa, cricket in New Zealand, obviously cricket here and in Australia. So I do enjoy it. Obviously I have a common theme with a lot of my friends who do similar stuff, so it's nice to go to a game here or there or a tour. I was actually at the South Africa Australia test match where Sandpaper Gate happened, which was great. A bunch of English lads giving the Aussies hell after they got caught rubbing the ball with sandpaper, which was very funny. And yeah, if you travel and you see these games, I'll have a bet, but I'm not betting in the same way. I'll have a bet just for interest or for a laugh with the boys. But it is very interesting. You see these amazing things happen in front of your eyes when you're actually at live events.
Okay, Matt, thanks. Now, you did say in the previous section, there's a few of you. I sort of assume that it'd be quite unique in respect of making a living punting at cricket. I mean, how many of you are there?
It's a good question. I imagine there's an awful lot that bet successfully that aren't on social media. But of the people that I know, there's probably 20 or 30 that that either do make a good living for it or manage to fool me online into thinking that they make a good living for it. I have a lot of friends of mine are also semi-professional or professional. I'm not a big fan of the phrase professional because it's hardly a profession, but full-time or at least part-time punters who make a living out of it.
Okay, now you don't want to mention any names, but are there some particular ones that you've whose opinion you really respect? So if so, would you sort of confer with them and discuss matches prior?
Yeah, I think so. We try and do that. It's important. Obviously, I have a good group of friends who I've known for a long time. If you were just starting out in the industry, you wouldn't have those connections. But as you sort of grow, you do tend to have those people that you meet that you respect their opinion of, and it's nice to bounce your theory off them. I wouldn't say it would take a lot for my opinion to be completely invalid in my head, but it's nice if you sort of speak to a couple of guys you know, you say this is my opinion currently, and they're like, yeah, I'm exactly the same. Just sort of reinforces your idea. And yet if they say the complete opposite, you might reduce stakes or you might think about what their thought process is, because they're obviously successful as well. So it'd be stupid to just disregard their theories as well.
Yeah, I've talked to other professional punters, and they sort of say if they talk to their confidants and you all agree, you have a bit of a press up.
Yeah, exactly.
Be the case.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's all relative because you could be maxed anyway, you know. So I wouldn't press again. But yeah, if some of the guys think that it's usually laying the draw in test matches. If you think that it's almost impossible for it to be a draw, and then you speak to a mate of yours and he says, yeah, there's no draw here, and press on the lay of the draw.
Now, we didn't want to make this a betting masterclass, because you do that already. You do like a seminars and sort of things where people pay for your knowledge.
That's right.
Why do you share it?
Well, because it makes me money, first of all. I think the markets are far too deep and far too liquid that me telling people what I do and educating them and helping them and them doing similar things wouldn't affect me in the same way as if you were betting into an illiquid market. So I think I think you could do it in racing. I don't see any reason that you couldn't do that as well, because the main markets are so deep that if I had an edge and I told you my edge and you bet the same thing, then we'd still all be able to get on. I guess there's a slight risk if you tell too many people that suddenly you've got some big modeler or something that's doing exactly what you're doing and eating the market. But I mean, there was £130 million matched on the World Cup game yesterday. You know, you just think, and that's before a penny's been matched with any bookie. That's just on an exchange. So I don't see any reason that me imparting my knowledge and getting paid for it's gonna affect me in any way.
Are they quite exclusive little?
What's that?
Are they quite exclusive for what you do? You know.
Not necessarily, no. I'd say fundamentally I just look for players on each side to be with and players on each side to be against. And then obviously if you get the sort of holy grail where you've got two players that you want to be with and the opposition has a bowler that you want to be against, then that'd be a big press. But that's sort of the fundamental strategy that I have.
Okay, what would be the biggest frustrations for you as a cricket punter?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have too many frustrations these days. I obviously struggled with the concept of premium charge on Betfair. That was difficult for me initially. Cricket doesn't help itself in some ways. It's not necessarily the punter's thing, but just from the sport itself, the scheduling's bad. Sometimes there'll be no game for 3 days, and then there'll be two games on at the exact same time, and you just wonder why they've scheduled it like that. And also, they have this issue with rain, so it's going to rain in Cardiff today at this game that's just started, and they'll come off usually too early, or they can't start in rain, so if it's literally spitting, and they would play if they were already on. Seems like some sort of archaic rule that they can't start in it, which makes no sense to me. If you're already on the field, why can't you start in the same conditions? There's no other sport in the world where that would be the case, you know.
So you're a cricket fan. So does your heart ever rule your head? Does it try to?
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. That's one of the key things when you're first starting out, that you have to be able to put that away. You can't bet on England because you're English, or Australian because you're an Aussie or whatever. It's just utterly ridiculous. I think I'd probably take advantage of it a little bit, because the main three teams that are overbet in cricket markets are India, Australia and England. So I'm frequently against those sides, unless they're playing each other, obviously.
So being a neutral in Australia must be handy.
Yeah, well, it's not too bad. I get all sorts. Obviously, when they beat us in the Ashes, I got plenty for that. Unfortunately, I wasn't there when we beat them over there. But it's usually light-hearted banter. They're a good bunch, really.
So did you move to Australia for this reason?
No. Just moved to Australia. Wanted a change. I wanted a nicer climate to live, to be honest. I don't know. England isn't the centre of the world. Isn't the be-all and end-all. I was quite happy to move. I moved to Spain before I moved to Australia 10 years ago. Quite happy to be in the sunshine.
Right, okay. So what would you say the biggest error that punters make when betting on cricket?
They traders hold their positions too long. They don't think it's getting a little bit technical, but a lot of people have the ability to find an entry position. They'll find a spot where they think that's a good bet. I like that. But then they're not actually thinking why they've bet it after they've bet it. What will happen is that they'll bet something. What they think will happen is going to happen, but then they won't exit that position. They'll run it and then lose. But for the average punter, I don't know. Probably backing batting sides more than they should, because it looks easier to back the batting side than the bowling side. But the standard of batting these days is pretty average, especially in the long format.
Okay, and we've already mentioned that you do your seminars, you earn money from that. So, but can you throw punters that are watching this a crumb of how to improve their betting?
Lay the draw in test matches. It's probably a good start. That's something that I do religiously. I have a system set up where I lay every draw in every test. There's a good guy on social media that has stats based on backing and laying the draw and backing every result in a test match, and laying the draw has been in front every year for the last 10 years. So that's a good fundamental strategy. And then I think if you're going to want to bet seriously into any sport, you have to have more knowledge than the guy next to you. So I think just working hard, not trying to make £1,000 a week day one, try and break even to start with, because that'll put you in front of 99% of people. If you can make £50 on the side, it pays for a few beers, and then if you can progress from there, then happy days.
Did you bet successfully on any other sports?
No, I don't. I used to do a bit of rugby betting. I tried to bet tennis, because tennis is an excellent sport to bet if you're any good at it, but I was useless. I lost a fortune, so knock that on the head. And also, just because there's so much cricket on, there's no requirement for me to try and learn anything new, and work-life balance is really important to me. So if I was trying to bet on the rugby or the tennis as well, I'd have absolutely no life.
There's a couple of things finally, but you mentioned a bit about cricket earlier, some of the problems, the frustrations. How do you think, in general, cricket's as a sport's health is, and how could it improve itself?
I think it's in a really healthy spot at the moment. I like the idea of new sides coming through and challenging the older sides, the more traditional sides. It'd be nice if more teams could win away at test matches, but I don't really see that happening in the future. It's very difficult to win a series away in a test match. I think, despite the fact that it aids me a lot, because it's quite an easy strategy in one day cricket to back the batting side, I think it would be nice if there was more of a contest between bat and ball, which it sort of seems like there might be in this World Cup. The pitches are a lot less flat so far than they have been. It'd be nice if bowl could dominate bat a little bit more. But I think fans want to see the ball in the stands. They want to see 350 v 350. And if that's what the paying public want, then I guess all the better for the sport.
All right, then finally, you've been a professional cricket punter for 12 years plus.
Yeah.
You're still a relatively young man. do you think this will be your living for the rest of your life, or have you got an exit strategy?
Yeah, I doubt it. I don't really want to be 65, staring at screens, betting on sport. Try and invest in a load of different stuff, diversify. We do some stuff in Australia with a tipping company and a sports hedge fund. So I'm trying to find ways to get out if necessary, because you never know. You know, one day I might not have an edge on cricket, or they might tighten up the guidelines on betting in play or something like that. So I hope not. I hope I'm playing golf or sat on a beach when I'm 65.
Brilliant, Matt Barker. Thank you very much.
Thanks, mate.